Welcome to the Gleeman's Apprentice, a Wheel of Time podcast. I am your Gleeman, Twitch Avery.
And I am his apprentice, Mandy Cat.
Travel in the wastelands in search of every story. The Gleeman's goes to find tales of bravery and glory. Pass along achievements accomplished by mighty folks. The telling of the wheel made up by different spokes. He comes across a long last singing whose clothes are tattered and worn. Invited her on his journey.
As Mandy Cat has already read the first four books of the series, there are always potential spoilers up through The Shadow Rising.
And after that, I'll be reading the rest of the books for the very first time with my Gleeman, Twitch.
Welcome back to the Gleeman's Apprentice. I am Gleeman Twitch.
And I'm Mandy Cat, the Apprentice.
And it is a beautiful day here in northern Minnesota. We are recording outside today with new mics, which actually pick up background noise a little bit more than my phone. So if you hear background noise of birds, I apologize, but it's just too nice of a day not to be out here.
Truly.
So how was your weekend, Mandy?
It was great. I went camping up the North Shore, Lake Superior in Minnesota, so made it to the U.S.-Canada border, did New Heights, Mount Josephine.
Nice.
As well as Sugarloaf Cove. Both were excellent.
Nice.
It was overall a great weekend. Saw some college friends, haven't seen them forever.
Awesome. Yeah, we're actually going to be on the North Shore in Grand Marais next, this coming weekend.
Oh, funny. Must do a week.
Yeah, we're doing a little trip with my in-laws, you know, the kids' grandparents. Now that everybody's vaccinated, we can finally get together. So, but we've got, we're just doing one chapter today. It's funny because for the first three books, we did so many chapters, really until like midway point in the book three, right? We were doing like 8 to 10 chapters a week, and now we've done 2 weeks of one chapters. But it's okay because there's a lot.
Yeah, and this is a great chapter, so I feel good just focusing on one at a time.
I'm here for it. My biggest thing is I just want to get you to book five.
I did have a moment where I was like, how long have I been reading the series only to have read four books?
Yeah, that's my fault.
But that's okay. This is my last reread, guys, so.
Yep, last book, and then we get into new territory, which is amazing. And yeah, let's just jump right into it.
All
right.
Chapter 2, The Whirlpool of the Pattern. And I just started with a little note. I actually looked at the symbol of the chapter for this one because it just looked great and I wanted to give kudos to the artist.
Yeah.
It is clearly a dragon, although they'd probably call it a long serpent with, you know, legs and claws.
What is it, a legged serpent,
is
what they say?
Yeah, a four-legged serpent with the lion's mane. It's beautiful. So, anyway, this chapter sold me on book four being one of the more amazing books of the series for someone who's only read four books. I love thrillers, and this is one of those chapters that I feel could be its own scary movie. Like, you could literally make this book a scary movie with a little bit of more intro-outro and not, you know, even separate from the series. That's how much I like it. So I wanted Twitch to start with the lovely narrative that starts us off in this chapter.
Inland, the hot night wind blew. North across the vast delta called the Fingers of the Dragon, a winding maze of waterways, broad and narrow, some choked with knife grass. Vast plains of reeds separated, clusters of low islands forested with spider-rooted trees seen nowhere else. Eventually, the delta gave way to its source, the River Aranon. The river's great width, spotted with the lights of small boats lantern fishing. Boats and lights bobbed wildly, suddenly and unexpected. and some older men muttered of evil things passing in the night. Young men laughed, but they hauled the nets more vigorously too, eager to be home and out of that dark. The stories said evil could not cross your threshold unless you invited it in. That was what the story said. But out in the darkness...
Oh my gosh. It's just a strong intro, and that's... I love all of it.
Yep.
I love about the... It was a wind that knocked their boats, and then they're suddenly like, oh, there could be evil things out here, and... The young guys, ha ha ha, but then they're actually really speeding up.
Well, exactly. It's the kids making fun of their dads for being silly, but I mean, really, it's ominous, right? Yeah. It's not a good feeling to be out there.
No. And then it goes into just more narrative.
Yep.
I kind of try to sum it up as small as possible, but it talks again about the stone is supposed to be impenetrable until now. And the quote-unquote strange new hopes danced in their heads. Hopes none in Terra had dared for 100 generations. Hope mixed with fears as old as the breaking. And just a side note, the white dragon banner still whipping in the wind with a scaly red and gold snake with legs and claws and a mane like a lion. There it is.
Yep.
And we enter Perrin's perspective. We're inside a fancy room in the stone. Albeit it was as simple as Perrin could attempt to get from the Maajir. And she's basically head housekeeper, right?
She's the leader of the household.
But because he's buzzed with the dragon, he needs the best, according to her. Apparently, that's a thing.
Yeah, she was scandalized that he only wanted, like, he wanted a simple room. And she was scandalized that the room that he was getting didn't even have a sitting room in it.
Perrin sitting there scratching his itchy beard growth that he's growing for Faeyil, quite clearly. And she's in his room and pacing, and actually pauses at that moment and says it suits him. Pretty much reading his mind.
Yep.
And I don't think she ever asked for it. I think she just did it. Or he just did it.
Well, he talks about that a little bit later.
We also get a small piece of Faeyil's life that I thought was important. That Perrin reflects that she had said her father is a merchant in Saldia. So.
Not only a merchant, the most successful wool.
I don't know.
Merchant, I think. I think he said fur trader. Huh. He's the most successful fur trader in Saldia.
I only said that because I was in Grand Marais and in Grand Portage, which, for the record, is where French voyagers came and got their beaver pelts.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
okay. Yeah. Hit you.
I've read James Missioner. I know. Cool. Yeah.
I was joking, but okay, fur trader.
Yeah, no, it specifically says he was the most successful fur trader in Saldia, in all of Saldia, so.
Perrin asks Faeyil, what's the matter? Smelling nervousness on her. And she points out that the dragon, and Perrin is always insisting his name is Rand, the dragon has lost interest in Perrin. Faeyil wants to leave, and Perrin says, well, Moraine won't stop ya. But that's not exactly what she wanted to hear.
So, I really actually highlighted this. I want to ask you a question here.
Yeah, and I do have it bolded, just an FYI.
How do you feel about the fact that Perrin can smell, well, whatever you want to call Faeyil at this point, significant other, early dating phase, but he can smell what her emotions are?
I mean, I have anxiety sweat that smells bad, too.
but he can, like, very, very specifically, like, he's getting to the point with his new sense of smelling, he can kind of tell what each smell is. So he can smell anger. Smell nervousness. He can smell anxiousness. He can smell joy. I'm just wondering, like, how do you feel that he is able to read her emotions in, like, kind of a foolproof way, but he doesn't talk to her about it. He just makes assumptions on how he's supposed to act because of what he's smelling.
I'm not offended at all. Like,
okay.
I still see it from his perspective. Like, he's probably trying to hide as much of his ability as possible. It's not like he's a fan of it. And it's all, I don't see this as a manipulation.
Actually
probably benefits him, because he'd be clueless otherwise and just be like, man, are you getting exercise pacing? Instead, he's actually informed she's a nervous Nelly.
But she doesn't get the option to speak on her own behalf. He's just making assumptions. My biggest thing, honestly, I never really thought about it that much until I started like listening to other podcasts and watching YouTubers, specifically Wheel of Time, that I started realizing, yeah, that's kind of an unfair advantage in a relationship.
Yeah,
it would be nice if he would be able to.
I'm going to fight back.
Okay.
Because this is his first dating relationship, and how the fuck should he know?
You are correct.
So
yes.
I would actually tell people, give him a fucking break. And just so you know, I see a lot of kids in their first time relationships in this age group. They don't know what they're doing.
He's 20 years old.
If he was like 40 years old and was a womanizer, yeah, that's twisted.
He's 20 years old. Yes, he comes from a small farming community, but it was still a village of at least a couple hundred people. You don't think that he's dated?
I never dated till after college.
Yeah, Dylan didn't either. You guys were anomalies.
No, I don't think so. I think there's plenty of people. It's just not, I mean, you come from a rural community with, like, yeah, Emmons Field. Who would even want to date there? Just saying.
No.
That's my perspective. So you're assuming people just date because there's nothing else to do, but some people have standards.
I never said that, but I find it funny that, I mean, Rand was kind of dating Egwene.
They're betrothed, though. I mean, it was already arranged, so then conveniently his dad was always around the inn.
Okay. I'm just saying, I don't know, it might be a little naive to just assume that this is parents' first relationship ever.
I disagree.
Okay.
He is so fucking awkward.
Okay.
I don't think he had a chance for a relationship.
Okay.
So I would fight those, like, I hear what you're saying if he was an experienced man, but also he's new at the whole wolf thing, and I think he's very insecure about it, and so he's not doing it as an advantage. I mean, I hear what people are saying, but I think they're being unfairly unempathetic towards parents' situation.
Okay.
So I strongly disagree.
No, that's great. That's great. I wanted to bring it up because I wanted the discussion. I wanted your point of view on it, so.
So anyway, yeah, Perrin asks, what do you want to hear from me, basically? Do you want me to say I want you to stay? And Fael, does she just change topic, kind of?
Well, she basically
swipes into, like, hey, Luthor and Kinslayer hurt everyone close to him, as well as bringing mayhem left and right. So kind of pointing out that, you know what, your buddy's going to do the same.
Well, and Perrin pushes back with, Rand is not Luthor and Kinslayer.
Right.
I mean, yes, he's the dragon, but he's not, he wouldn't, he isn't, he's going to, and, you know, he trails off.
Yeah. So Fael is saying she's been talking to Bane and Chiad. And isn't Perrin a little bit like, yeah, I know you have been.
Yeah.
And
yeah, she's been spending a lot of time with the Aiel women, which is kind of like pissing off the Terran ladies. But anyways.
And then Fael says, Moraine is unable to watch Perrin or Matt using the power because apparently Moraine keeps asking, where are they at? And at that point, she begs Perrin, leave with me, because, yeah, Moraine isn't just, like, stalking you with the power. However, Perrin says, I can't. So she asks, why not? And then he basically says, it's what I have to do.
Like,
oh,
diverted.
She's just whining that she doesn't want the hairy chest to drivel about a man having to do his duty, but guess what he was about to say?
He says, will you listen? He shouted. I think I am part of Rand's destiny somehow. Matt, too. I think he can't do what he has to unless we do our part as well. That is the duty. How can I walk away if it might mean Rand will fail? And she basically just kind of like, really, did Moraine tell you this? That's ridiculous. Don't listen to Aes Sedai. They're liars. And he says, I worked it out for myself. I think T'Varin are pulled toward each other, or maybe Rand pulls us, Matt and me both. He's supposed to be the strongest T'Varin since Ardor Hawkwing, maybe since the Breaking. Matt won't even admit he's T'Varin, but however he tries to get away, he always ends up drawn back to Rand. Loyal says he has never heard of three T'Varin, all the same age and all from the same place. And that's when she basically says, Loyal doesn't know everything.
But he does.
Well, he is 90.
And he writes and reads.
Perrin's thinking to himself, I'm pretty sure Loyal's read more books than I've ever even heard of.
Right.
You know? Maybe 90 is young in Ogier standards, but he still has 90 years of reading.
And not that Fael knows this, but we... Or maybe she does. Moraine has asked Perrin for his knowledge about the Forsaken. Was Fael there when...
Loyal.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
Yes.
Moraine has asked Loyal for his knowledge about the Forsaken.
Yes.
And was Fael there?
Yes, that was...
You should know this. Even Moraine respects Loyal's knowledge.
Yeah, that happened directly before she went into the room and got trapped with the hedgehog.
Okay. Anyway, sorry, Fael, not to laugh at your misfortune.
But anyways, yeah, so they're having this argument, right?
Yep, and more about the Taviren stuff, because... Perrin does highlight, you know, Matt keeps trying to leave.
Yep.
And he keeps getting pulled back. Like, this is what happens. And Perrin is not, I mean, he was shouting and stuff, but I do feel like he's just innocently trying to piece together, because he thinks very slowly, but he's piecing together, like, I sincerely now believe this as true. It's not just coincidence.
Yeah.
And I think he's recognizing, too, like, this is his calling. And if you remember Eye of the World, when he and Egwene were lost in the woods, and Elias found them.
Yes.
Elias made a comment, and man, if you kept heading in the direction you're going, you'd end up at the Eye of the World. I mean,
yeah,
he as a Taviren was naturally pulled toward he was gonna go.
Okay. That's a great theory. I love that.
Right?
Yeah.
It was in the Eye of the World, but it was the spine of the whatever it was.
Yeah, the spine, but that would have gotten him closer to the Eye of the World than... if they went to Caemlyn, where they're supposed to go.
Because I do disapprove of shouting. I don't like to be shouted at.
Yeah.
But it's not like, yeah, it isn't that he favored shouting. He just realized, like, oh, she actually listened to me.
Yeah, and that's interesting. That's wary, right? That's not a healthy, like, she almost appreciated the fact that he shouted at her.
Right.
As if that's expected.
This is a type of communication I'd very much be like, he should already know better about that, but...
Okay,
but,
so good. You're not okay with shouting. I'm not either. No. But you're okay with people just going up behind you and sniffing?
I mean, I know that's not what... I'm not gonna answer that.
Okay, so you're that creepy one. Anyways, this is actually a sweet moment.
Yeah,
Fael says, poor Perrin, I left Saldea to find adventure, and now that I'm in the heart of one... The greatest since the breaking, all I want to do is go somewhere else. You just want to be a blacksmith, and you're going to end up in the stories whether you want it or not.
And there's true lovers quarrel, this huge dynamic of creepy smelling, shouting, not listening to each other, ending up in this beautiful summary that she finally recognizes, like, oh, that's right, I have privilege that I chose to come here, now I can choose to leave, and you just never wanted this.
Yep.
And you're stuck.
Yep.
Sorry, Paradox. So Perrin holds his hammer and axe, noting again the emotional weight of the axe and avoiding thinking about how he had killed with it. Admits to himself that she's right. All he wants is to be a blacksmith. He quotes Master Luhan that you cannot walk away from what has to be done.
Yeah.
They chat a bit, and then...
He picks up the hammer... and it just sits down and is holding it and just thinking about the difference between the hammer, which is something that he can make things with, that he has made things with at a forge. The hammerhead weighed more than twice as much as the axe blade, but it was the axe that felt heavier by far every time he picked it up. And yeah, so he picks up the hammer, sits down, and continue.
Well, I was just going to say, a cock crows.
Mm.
And Fael quotes, my nurse used to say that means a death is coming. And then the axe drops to the floor. Well, that's odd. Wasn't it just sitting on, was it on a placement on the wall or something?
Yeah, it was just leaning up against the wall.
And then the axe wiggles on the floor. Well, that's strange. And then the axe launches directly at Perrin's face. This is the horror story, guys. He automatically hits it with a hammer, not thinking, and it is a fight scene with a mysteriously possessed axe. Totally reminds me of Bludgers and Harry Potter when
the
witch to, like, follow him.
Yeah, if we were Brett and Danny, we'd take a shot right now.
I'll drink some coffee. Perrin holds the axe away from his face. Then it launches toward Fael. So this evil possessed axe can adapt.
Well, hold on. So he knocks it away.
Yeah, and automatically, without thinking, he has a hammer, knocks it away from his face.
And it heads right back at him.
Yep.
On that journey, Fael grabs it.
Oh, okay.
Because it passes her. So she grabs it, and then it starts attacking her. So then he grabs it, pulls it away from her, and...
But then it launches back at him.
And it's almost like the second he grabs it, like the spike, because it's one side is the axe, and then it's got the spike at the end, or like on the other side, and the spike almost hits him in the face, and he's only able, like just barely able to stop it, and he's wrestling it with it, and Fael is trying to get in the middle of it.
Yeah, it's a workout, guys. Like, can you imagine an adaptive, mysteriously possessed axe that's attacking you and your lover? So anyway, Perrin is yelling at Fael to leave this time. I appreciate his yelling, because he's just like, do it now. But in true Fael fashion, she doesn't want to. Perrin shoves her out the door whilst holding the axe away from him and fighting the axe's urge.
With one hand. With one hand.
Right.
Thank God this guy's, like, arms are bigger than, like, both my legs put together. But still, you know, like he's fucking... You've got to imagine that's really hard.
Oh, yeah.
Think if you're outside raking leaves. And all of a sudden the rake starts attacking you. Would you be able to, like, hold the rake? You know, and rakes are a lot lighter than an axe, so...
Oh, for real. He does have success shoving her out, and he has to hip check the lock.
Yeah.
But, of course, then the axe proceeds to attack him, and Perrin is very aware he's losing steam. So he actually has to deke it, in which he pulls it toward him, but jumps out of the way in the nick of time, only for it to fully wedge inside into the door. And I just want to say, this isn't like a particle board door. Like, this is a legit
wooden door.
Legit.
Yep.
And then he notices the life seems to be gone from the axe and thinks to himself, madness. Madness walks wherever Rand is. So
yep.
He's already playing Rand.
Yep.
Perrin then realizes, I can't hear Fael.
Fael's not screaming
she's
anymore. What's going on?
Opens the door. She's stuck in the motion of knocking, like mid-knock, and he sees the axe blade went through the door, and she says, another inch.
She holds up her fingers.
Yeah. She basically almost had a nose job.
Well, I mean, she does have a fairly bold nose, accordingly to Perrin. But, first reader perspective, at any point, did you think that the axe had gone through and stabbed Fael in the face?
No.
Okay, I didn't either.
I
appreciated the tension that he gives us there. Because, you know, he does give us obvious tension right there. Like, Perrin stops and realizes that Fael's not hidden. But there's no way he's going to introduce this character who has the will and strength of Fael and then kill her a half a book later, right?
Yeah, it was just a no.
Okay, perfect.
And plus, they have a quick makeout scene, FYI.
Right.
And Fael also thinks it was Rand, and Perrin does agree. And then they're going into the stone to find Rand and tell him to stop it. And actually, I'm not sure I agree that it's Rand. And I know I've read it before, but in my head, I'm like, doesn't this seem like something a Forsaken would do? Or...
So that's...
Or a Black Aja.
So that's right where you're... I remember it was probably, what, eight months ago, maybe 9 months ago, you texting me after you read this chapter.
Because it was a great chapter.
It's a great chapter! It's one of the best chapters in the whole series, if not in the book. I love it. But, I remember that, and I was just like, that's when I was like, fuck, we've got to do a podcast together.
That's funny.
So, anyways...
So that's part one of basically a three-part chapter.
Yes. It's kind of like a trilogy chapter.
Because guess what? Perspective change.
Boom, boom, boom.
To your boy, Matt.
I love Matt. I love this. I'm not going to lie. Out of the three perspectives that we get in this chapter, this is by far my favorite.
And this was the one that was officially, first read through, me thinking Robert Jordan is a creative genius and should have written scripts for movies.
Once
we get to Matt's special day, but there's quite a build up, right? It begins with Matt sweating in the heat of tear, playing the card game Chop with rich young lordlings. Do we know what Chop is?
I mean, it sounds like poker.
Oh, okay.
It sounds like poker.
And Matt is recognizing, of course, it's cards with these dandies instead of dice, because lords believe dicing to be for peasants.
They would rather wear peasant clothing than dice.
And the thing, of course, is Matt's luck. He has luck with random stuff like dice, but he is noticing a little bit of level of luck with the cards as well, holding in his hand the three highest rulers. But, context, he's greedily pushing to win more gold before ditching Moraine, Rand, and company, knowing he'd never make this much money gambling dice in roadside inns.
Yes.
So, that's the why.
He is there to make money. He's been making a shit ton of money. Just from tonight, he's got a pile of gold on the table and an even bigger pile of gold in a pouch in his pocket.
Yeah.
And
more than he's ever
he's
seen.
He's planning on doubling it by the end of the night. Like he's been doing this. He's been doing this night after night after night with these guys. So he is just taking their money. He's talking about how like the price of 10 farms in the Two Rivers is basically passed around the table every single night.
Wow.
So then there's another thing. His level of like satisfaction and like comfortableness is starting to grow, you know, become a lot less, a lot more exclusive, right? Like he wants nicer things. He's starting to get into that guy. And Perrin mentioned in the previous chapter, Matt likes gaudy things. Matt gets a bigger room because he wants a bigger room. I don't want a bigger room.
Yeah, and Matt even recognizes how his tastes have changed.
Yeah.
Even though, like, I think he's pretty hesitant to admit the adventuring has changed him, yet he is aware.
He says in his head, he's pretty sure he wouldn't be satisfied going back and living in the Two Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's grown comfortable with the fact that he is a lucky son of a bitch and can basically just gamble
his
way through life. There are a lot of people who make their money by gambling.
Yeah.
And they've got like a several shows on ESPN about
professional gamblers.
Yeah, professional gamblers.
Oh.
It's a thing.
I would have too much anxiety. But, okay, Matt's a professional gambler in Tear. Side note, the cards are painted by a local in town, and some of the new decks already have a dragon.
Already have Rand's face with the dragon banner.
That looks suspiciously like Rand.
Yeah.
And I think, I just like that idea of, like, a deck of cards. I don't know. So it is a deck of cards, essentially.
It's a deck of cards, but they're do you remember, you're almost as old as me, so do you remember the old memory game?
Well, yeah.
With like the cardboard stock? Like the thick, cardboard? I imagine that's what these are.
Okay.
That's nicer. They're not, yeah, probably a little bit thinner, probably a little bit more durable so you can shuffle them, but still, they're pretty thick, and they're hand-painted. Do you know what I'm sure somebody in the community has done this. If they haven't, Rob Christensen, the artist, I'm looking at you right now, and I'm actually going to tag you in this episode. If somebody hasn't made a deck of chop cards with Rand as the ruler of cups, they need to. That needs to happen. So
thank you in advance.
Just throwing out there to Creations by Jen and Rob Christensen, the artist, or Rob the artist, you guys need to get on that. That would be pretty amazing. Or if you know somebody who could do that. Anyways.
So it goes on to a description of all the lords playing at the table. Feel free to fill in anything I mess up. So Raymond.
Okay.
Ryman, whatever.
I actually drew.
Of course you did.
The table.
And he's just commenting about sea folk ships docked today. He's described as chasing the latest fashion as assiduously as he chases women.
Yep. He's got the oiled beard, which is the latest. Okay. It's the chin beard, like, but it's slicked pointy. Down and pointy. So yep, that is the latest fashion among the young Terran nobles.
Okay.
And Raymond chases the fashion like he chases women. And the only thing that can, basically those are the only two things that can pull him away from
cards.
Gambling. Yes.
A Dorian is plump and comments
pink-cheeked
that Raymond is more interested in sea folk women swaying than ships. So you're not interested that the seafolk ships are here. You're ready to go find some women.
Yeah. Adorian's basically calling me. I was like, you don't care about the ships. You don't care how fast they are. You just want to get a glance at those
hips.
Yeah. Yeah. The nice ladies. Yeah.
Which we're going to learn more about seafolk women on ships later.
But right now we're going to learn more about just the high lords, okay. the young Terran lords.
Carloman is the dealer.
Yep.
And then he teases Adorian, yeah, you'll just be lucky to even get a whiff of seafolk women's perfume.
they're very they're very secretive. The sea folk don't really come on land. Like the guy who's in charge of, or the person who's in charge of the trading comes on land, deals with the dock master, whatever they called in whichever city you're in, and they make the deals, they make the trades, and then they load up and they take off.
And then we have a foppish fellow named Baron, who always appears to look down his nose at others. Foppish, huh?
And so I was going to ask you, so I hope you're not going to ask me, what is foppish?
No, I was going to ask you, in context, I would say, I actually, lazy, maybe?
Foppish? So my first thought was,
go on.
Okay, so my deductive reasoning is Adorian's plump and pink-cheeked.
Yeah.
So chubby and slow to maturity, right? So I would have gone there for foppish, okay. But he already described plump and pink-cheeked. So, and then we get into some more details. Estion is a potato-nosed, plain-looking fellow. So that's not foppish.
Okay.
But then it also goes on to say that he looked down his nose upon others. So foppish to me, I would say, arrogant. You think too much. You think a lot of yourself. You hold yourself into high esteem. So that's where I would go with it.
Now, believe it or not, someone has been described as foppish.
In this series?
Yeah.
Up to this point?
One of these lords. Someone who's concerned with one's clothes and appearance in an affected and excessive way. So, like the...
Okay.
Grayman, seeking all the latest fashion.
Yep.
And it is derogatory.
Yep.
Apparently. So, there we have it. It is... He's just vain.
So, yeah.
He's
vain. He's trendy. Yeah. Right. What are they called back in the 90s? The posers. He's a poser.
Oh, a poser.
He's a poser.
That's okay.
Yeah. And which one was that? That was Baron?
That was Baron.
Okay.
And then, yeah, Estienne just looks like a farmer, but is also apparently from the richest family and the drunkest, as well as the crudest.
Okay.
Fucking Estienne.
Yeah.
I want to slap him.
Yeah. I'm just going to go ahead and spoiler warning here to the end of the episode. When we did not plan this.
Hashtag
but
don't like.
I went out of my way to find a different kill than Estienne because I assumed it was going to be yours.
Oh, I actually haven't thought that far. But
I actually did. I actually thought about it this time. I've been editing our episodes and I was like, we've got to be better about being ready with our fuck, marry, kills.
I'm not.
but anyways, I don't have my fucking marry yet, but I have my kill. Okay. I already planned it. So
okay. So Matt keeps getting good cards, tries to avoid talking about Aiel. The young men all know Matt's connections, and Matt just wants out of there. And right now he's just annoyed that Perrin is under Fael's spell because he's probably not going to leave with Matt. And why is Tom so settled into staying at the Stone?
Yep.
But you know what? Matt's willing to travel alone, so he's intent. I'm getting out. So Matt keeps conversation flowing because he has such good cards and he wants the lords to bet more money.
So the conversation comes to a lull.
Right.
When drunk Estienne mentions the Aiel. He makes a joke about
how, it's one of those hot topics you just don't want to talk about.
Yeah, well, he makes a joke about, it's you would never be satisfied with the... with sea folk, it's the Isle savages you really want to, you know, stay away from. And
it's a conversation kill.
No one's happy that the Aiel are there. The only thing that they might be less happy about is that there's four Aes Sedai. Air quotes, Aes Sedai.
Okay.
But yeah, so Matt's looking around and he notices that everybody is basically picking up their coin. And he doesn't feel like he's made enough money tonight. He needs to, like, at least double what he's already got.
Yep.
And he has three rulers. And I believe he just picked up the fourth ruler. He picked up the ruler of cups, which was the ruler of Tyr. So he's got four rulers. If he can just get them to put in one more ante so that they can get one more deal, he's pretty fucking sure, because of his luck, that he is going to get the ruler of flames? I can't remember which ruler it is. But anyways, like, he's pretty sure he can get basically five kings.
I don't know if he's certain about it. He just knows he already has enough cards to win in his hand.
He specifically says he's already won, but his luck is on right now, more so than it ever has been when he's been playing cards. And he knows that he's so confident that even if he doesn't get the next ruler, he's still going to win. So he wants to make sure that he can keep this going, right?
So he does so by talking about the maiden's kiss. And it is apparently a story he's told before, but now readers learn for the first time a little bit of context. Apparently Rurark told Matt to play the game Maiden's Kiss as a means of getting to know the Aiel women. Turns out it was a cruel joke. Because even Bane had said, I never heard of a man asking to play this game.
Okay, so I'm sorry. I've got to do this. I need to correct you real fast. This isn't a story that he's told before. He thinks very specifically to himself. One glance at their faces was enough to tell him that simply changing the subject would not be enough. But there was another way. If he made them laugh at the Aiel, is it worth making them laugh at me too? Chewing his pipe stem, he tried to think of something else. Baron picked up a stack of gold in each hand and moved to stick them in his pockets. I might just try these sea folk women, Matt said quickly, taking his pipe to gesture with. Odd things happen when you chase Aiel girls. Very odd. Like the game they call Maiden's Kiss. He had their attention, but Baron had not put down the coins, and Carloman still showed no sign of buying another card. Estienne says something stupid and drunk, and Matt says, and this is where it is. Matt managed a grin. Burn me, I've told this much, I might as well tell the rest. So that's where it is.
If someone does make a comment later, they already know part of his story.
No, they know that he's friends with Rand. But no. What you're thinking of. So Carloman says, you cannot stop there. Go on. When was this? 2 nights ago, I'll wager. When you didn't come for the game and no one knew where you were. I was playing Stones with Tom Maryland that night, Matt said quickly. This was days ago. He was glad he could lie with a straight face. So they knew that what he's talking about happened 2 nights ago, but he lies about it.
Okay.
But they didn't know what happened. He hasn't told the story yet. It's not really a big deal. I just wanted to clarify. He hadn't told the story yet because he was putting himself out on a limb by telling the story, in the sense that he's going to embarrass himself. And he's the type of person that doesn't like to be embarrassed, right? He enjoys embarrassing other people, but he doesn't want to be embarrassed. So, in order to keep these guys betting, he's going to go ahead and embarrass himself to lighten the mood so that they can keep going.
All right. So anyway, as I was trying to say before, you rudely interrupted.
That was very rude, and I do apologize.
We learn Rurark told Matt to play the game Maiden's Kiss as a means of getting to know Aiel women, but it was a cruel joke. The women put spears against his neck, and he had to give a worthwhile kiss before they would ease up on their spears. And that's basically the game. So anyway, that did get the men laughing. They did bet more money again. But again, the Lordlings clearly don't like the Aiel and want them out, to make that known. But at the same time, they really don't understand the lethality of the Aiel as they make their little, you know, rants and ravings about what I would do to get rid of them. But
yeah, No, they're assholes.
And then freaking Estienne ruins the calm and whines about the dragon, setting a decree that lords can be called to magistrate by commoners. And then I'm sure you're going to want to read some of this.
Yeah, he says, Matt, will you speak to the Lord Dragon? You will speak to the Lord Dragon, won't you? Matt asks cautiously, about what? Oh, didn't I say? Oh, his proclamation, Matt. The Lord Dragon's, his last one, where he said commoners had the right to call lords before a magistrate. Who ever heard of a lord being summoned to a magistrate? And for peasants. And Matt says, it would be a shame if you were tried and judged just for having your way with a fisherman's daughter, whatever she wanted, or for having some farmer beaten for splashing mud on your cloak? And I gotta go on, I'm sorry.
No, I knew you were gonna read this part, go ahead.
Exactly! Though it wouldn't come to that, of course. A lord being tried before a magistrate? Of course not. And no fisherman's daughters. Smell of fish, you see. However you have them washed. A plump farm girl is best for me. Estienne's a fucking, like...
He's a tool.
He's the obvious kill.
Yeah, you're
that's,
right.
That's why I went out of my way to find somebody else to kill.
And it is extra emphasis to Matt, whose sisters are farm girls.
Yeah, yeah. and there, you know, there's a little bit to say about Matt's character right now. He obviously despises these people.
He does.
He thinks very, very little of them. They do not share his values in any way, shape, or form. He has been playing a part so that he can make money. So there's this whole, like... And you definitely can't call it a Robin Hood, because he's not stealing from the poor and giving... Or stealing from the rich and giving to the poor. He's stealing from the rich and giving... I mean, I guess he would call himself poor. So, in a way, he's Robin Hooding for himself. But
no, he's not a Robin Hood.
But no, not at all. But he's taking these guys' money and he doesn't feel bad about it. But the fact that he is associating with these fucking pricks, like horrible, horrible people, and especially Estienne, who is the richest of them all, so he's the most privileged of us all. And but they're all just arrogant fucks.
They are.
I feel like... Anyways, go on.
Well, and we're going to get a little bit more of how much a dick Estienne is. Adorian does note, like, Matt's mood and tries to distract Estienne from the topic of raping farm girls and asks, hey, have you decided who you're going to marry? And Estienne is like, oh, I don't know, maybe Madore? Because she has three pretty maids. And at that point, I'm like, seriously?
Yeah.
Going to marry her for her maids that you're going to be screwing?
And he's going to be able to get away with it. We already got this in The Dragon Reborn when Matt was like, why don't you call the Defenders of the Stone on this prick? We're talking about...
Corman?
Yeah, Was it? No. And anyways, it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
Maybe it was Corman. I can't remember. But but to the whole point... We know that the Tyr is very classist.
Okay.
Like because he was like, why don't you call the you know, Defenders of the Stone on this asshole who's cheating you with his weighted dice?
Oh, to the innkeeper, you mean?
To the, yes.
Okay, I thought you were talking about, like, he was telling a woman to call, anyway. Okay.
No, he was talking to the innkeeper. I think the innkeeper was Corman. I can't remember who the bad guy was.
I thought it was Lord Corman. I don't know. The guy in the green silk shirt.
Yeah.
I can picture him.
He was the big guy who Matt was surprised at that he was big because he had like a weak voice.
Yeah.
Anyways, sorry, so, huge rant. Go on.
But Adorian continues to read Matt's mood and then just changes topic to the rumor. I heard the dragon will be leading us to war with Ilion. This seems to surprise Matt.
Yes.
Doesn't it?
Yes.
And he even says, I don't think Rand would do that. But then Matt just starts thinking how much Rand has changed, and this is where he does recognize his own tastes have changed.
Yep.
And he's doing this, he's maneuvering a gold coin across his knuckles. I'm kind of picturing those people who are very, got good
dexterity. Yeah.
And that's an obvious shout back that he's not going back to Emmons Field to be a horse trader.
No, or a farmer, no.
Yeah, the dealer calls his turn, Matt puts on a show of hesitancy, then places his coin. He feels his luck flood and turns up the card, and it's Ye Old Amerlin Seat.
I believe it's the
Keeper of the Flames.
Yep.
And holding the Flame of Tar Valon.
Yep.
At this point, he has all top five cards, and he thinks his luck is moving from dice to cards at this time, just because he can feel it. So now, you're right. He can recognize that luck.
It's not like the tingling that he gets with dice, but it's the tickling.
Okay.
It's subtle. It's different.
And he mutters, still feels it. The light burned my bones to ash if it is not so. Immediately, Essien calls him out for speaking old tongue.
Yeah.
And even does a decent translation. And Essien, just side note, saying, well, I'd thank my old tutor if I can find him, which just makes me think, where'd your tutor go?
You probably got executed because that, he didn't fucking... because he never learned the old tongue, so the tutor got punished for it, other than the fact that Estian's just a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But actually, just for the record, Estian did a great job. But, of course, Matt hadn't realized he'd been talking in old tongue and has apparently done it before, because Estian was trying to call him out on it. Then the lordlings are just arguing about the real translation, and Matt asks, are you guys here to babble like old women knitting or play cards?
Yep. And he knows he's got the win. He knows he's 100% on this, so he is going to go. And he does not want another stupid Estian comment to derail the situation.
And then
so they all put their ante in.
Crows. Which Matt reassures himself, no one is going to die. Oh, I don't know. This is wild. First read through, I was like, I have never seen a horror story do something like this. I mean, to a certain degree I have, but not exactly like this. I'm like, this would have been a great movie. So Matt looks at his cards. And the Amerlin's flame has turned into a knife, which she stabs him with.
Yep.
Matt yells, finger bleeding. It wasn't made up. And then time slows and Matt feels caught in jelly.
Yep.
Just amazing scene right here. The card floats, grows larger until the Amerlin steps out of the card. Cruel smile, ready to knife Matt. Behind her, the Ruler of Cups and High Lord of Terran are also growing and stepping out of their card.
So the Ruler of Cups is the High Lord of Terran.
Oh, okay.
And then...
he's stepping out of his card, and this is terrifying, right?
Yep. And then the other one, I can't remember if it's Flute...
There's a third, yeah.
But there's a third one...
growing.
That is growing.
And... essentially, Matt is throwing knife after knife after knife, and at long last, Matt falls to the floor, and time catches up. And in that moment, Adorian is freaking out. Hey, Matt, you don't gotta fight just because your cards suck.
Yeah.
Estienne is just seeking out all the pitchers and gobbling more wine.
Yeah.
Raymond insists, I didn't see anything, but he's staring at the floor very, very, fastidiously. And gathering all dropped coins, and there's even a servant somewhere just terrified.
Yep. But they all claim they didn't see anything.
So are they that scared of Matt? But I think they saw something.
I'm pretty sure they saw something.
But they're refusing.
So remember, we also have to. So despite on top of the fact that the Terrans are complete classists and piece of shits,
right.
Like at least the nobles, the highborn, they are also fastidiously, you use that word, and I really like that word, against anything to do with the power.
Supernatural, yeah.
Yeah, anything to do with the power. Aes Sedai are accepted when they come to Tear, but they are, it's outlawed, like they are not allowed to use the power when they're there. And that's why we've got all this in the Dragon Reborn, but that's why they collected everything to do with the power,
yep.
Or anything they thought might do with the power, so that they can stuff it into the the heart of the stone and just keep it out, you know, keep it away from everybody else.
And so I think it happened. It was slow motion, but you know, at the same time for Matt, it was all happening
very distinctly. I think for Matt, everything slowed down, and I would say that possibly to Varin or his luck or a combination of the two of them that makes it slow down for him. So that, or you know, you get yourself in that moment where something tragic is about to happen and everything just slows down for that second, and you're able to think really in depthly right before like that impact or, you know, whatever is about to happen. So that could be what happened to Matt. I think it might be something to do with Tavern.
So Matt does see all three cards, normal size, yep, on the wall, held up by his knives. And the Amaranth still holds a knife, and his thumb is still bleeding.
Yeah.
The other lords are studiously searching for coins on the floor. Matt finds his other cards and tears them for safe measure. And I think he tore those ones off the wall as well. He's just tearing them all up.
Oh, yeah.
And then he curses Rand and mutters, "Leave me out of the madness." Matt grabs his purse and leaves. So again, Matt's blaming Rand. And I'm like, I don't know. I feel like this is something Black Aja would do to set y'all up or Forsaken. But either way, I don't care. That was incredible, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a great scene. I love that scene. And I love the tension in the room. I love, because like,
right,
they, especially Adorian. I feel like out of these five, Adorian's probably, I don't know if he's least piece of shit of them, but he's the most empathetic of them.
Yeah.
He's the one that can read Matt's mood and is trying to get everybody to a place where they're not talking about politics, they're not talking about the IEL, yeah, they're not talking about savages, air quotes, you know. They're just playing the game because he can tell that, number one, like Matt says to himself, he could punch any one of them in the face if he wanted to, and they wouldn't do anything because who his friend was. Because he's Lord Dragon's friend. And they allude to it quite a few times. Essien asks Matt to make sure that Rand doesn't hang them when he rapes farm girls. You know,
right.
I think either Raymond or Byron asks Matt if the rumor about attacking Ilion is true. You know what I mean? Like they know that he's Matt's friend. They know that he grew up in the same village as Matt or as Rand. And they're assuming that he's still really close to Rand, even though Matt avoids Rand like the plague nowadays. So they're not going to do anything, but they're also going to avoid the fact that the supernatural happening just happened.
It was weird. Yeah, I'm trying to think of it from their perspective. And yeah, so for them it was just a flash, the length of time it would take Matt to jump up from the table and fall down throwing knives.
Honestly, there's a possibility that everything happened so quickly that they didn't notice.
Right, and that's the thing.
They didn't notice the cards expanding. They didn't notice the people coming out of them.
But I still think they saw something. No, like in a scary movie when there's those things that flash and the people know something's there, but they couldn't quite grasp what it was.
No.
But the people watching the movie at home can pause it and go, "Oh my gosh, this is creepy." Anyway.
Or could it be like a sign of schizophrenia?
On Matt's part?
No,
this is...
I mean, he has been, like, speaking a different language without ever learning it.
Come on, bro. That's his heritage. We all know it. He's of the Red Eagle. He's Tavirin. And, yeah, clearly I still... And I think that's why part of this... I mean, that was just part two. But I'm like, they're all Tavirin, and they're all being massively attacked right now. Seems like it's something the dark people are up to. But, of course, it's all separate. So, naturally, Matt would blame Rand.
But so do you think these attacks are, like, from a first reader perspective, do you think that these attacks were simultaneously?
Yeah.
Like orchestrated?
Crows.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think first reader perspective, I never blamed Rand. Because, change of perspective, Rand's turn.
And what happens?
Well, actually, first it's just a normalish nightmare, right? He's just sleeping. And in the nightmare, the Amaranth is coaxing him into a rope halter for his neck. Then Moraine looks super scared and is also prompting him, just go into the halter. But he runs away and finds Elaine and Min, but they're asking him to skinny dip.
Yeah.
And then Egwene sees him with them. They're already in the water, and Egwene runs away upset. You know, it's the usual type of nightmare. And Rand wakes up.
That doesn't sound like a nightmare to me.
Well,
I'm kidding.
Well,
I'm
for Emmonsfield Rand.
Okay, yep.
Who can't see a naked woman.
He has a very thick chastity belt, right?
It's big. It doesn't. Has like 3 master locks. Rand wakes up, sleeping in his bedroom in the stone, his old side wound hurting. Kalindor, safely tucked into a fancy stand the High Lords had given him. Which he thinks is just because they're scared of it.
Oh, yeah, right? Of course. Yeah. And we just talked at length about how they are scared of it.
And he hears a rustling across the room. He seeks the void and jumps up, wielding his one power Heron sword. Only, it's Bear Lane.
He jumps up and brings on his flame sword with the heron on it.
Yep.
Simultaneously, all of the lamps and candles in the room come alight. Every single one of them. It goes from, it's like stadium lights. There's also just boom.
Yeah, that would be a pretty intense.
But it's great the way he writes it. I really appreciate that. Anyways.
And Bear Lane is known as the first of Maine.
Yep.
And she never did return to rule her nation after not being held hostage.
It's been like a month, right? That they've been here. Yeah.
And she only has eyes for the dragon reborn. She's a gold digger.
I only have eyes
for the dragon.
Ba-dum-ba-dum. For you.
And that's what she sings as she enters Rand's bedroom.
Pretty much.
However, she's wearing only a fitting nightie. She has a little robe. But Rand just can't help but stare.
He's trying not to.
He puts away the sword but stays connected to the void. And then he asks, hey, why did the Aiel guards let you through? And she told them, all I had to say is the dragon had summoned me. And then he's like, why on earth would you come in the middle of the night?
Why
and
would
finally,
I summon you in the middle of the night? He's so naive. It's like, Rand, come on, man.
And she can't mean that. I mean, this guy can't even think the word sex.
Can you imagine this happening to Matt? What do you think Matt would do?
Make out.
Oh, Matt, no.
Matt would go
be all the way.
Naked
Matt,
already.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Matt would be like, fuck yeah!
That's cool. At this moment, Berlin drops her sheer robe, leaving even less there, which exposes her shoulders and cleavage, and now Rand admittedly cannot stop staring, and she knows it. Rand insists, I will talk with you in the morning. She advances again, asking if he's already absorbed stuffy Tyran ways or is reticent because of Two Rivers culture.
Yeah.
I'm like, ding, ding, ding.
Ding,
Two Rivers.
Yes, Two Rivers.
She is not taking no for an answer.
Yeah.
So does anyone chew her apart for being this aggressive? I mean, she's essentially trying to rape him. Like, he does not want this. Has anyone? I'm just saying, if you're going to tear apart Perrin, please tear apart Bear Lane.
Yes, people do. Yes. It's very much a disgust.
So, anywho, she even tries to throw herself into his arms, but this time he channels air, and she's pushed back across the room as if by a wall.
Some stuff on the floor. A book.
It literally is air, like a wall of air. Not like violently. It just pushes her away. He even ties off the power, watching what he does and learning the exact same way Egwene learns the power. Mm-hmm. So he just did something, but he can now look and understand what he did. Berlain bows, begging forgiveness and also exposing further down her shift.
Yeah.
And then a cock crows. She looks up. But looks past Rand, terrified. Oh my gosh, are you ready for this?
Are you?
Yeah.
Cool.
Rand looks behind him, and his reflection is stepping out of the mirror.
Yeah.
Ugh. Which, number one, mirrors are scary. I mean, there are good scary movies about mirrors. Like,
yeah.
Oh, but this is creepy.
Isn't there a movie Oculus? Called The Mirror?
Oh, probably.
Oh, Black Mirror. There's a TV show. I haven't watched it.
Rand calls his one power sword as a mirror close by. Also has a Rand coming out of it. And he slashes that Rand, only to see more Rands come out of more reflections. So at that point, Rand explodes all the mirrors in the room with the power.
Yep.
So he catches on quick. Ah, snap. Which I'm very glad teeny tiny Rands didn't come out of all the shards.
They did.
Oh, damn it.
They did. Well, one does.
So There are three full-size rams still waiting for him. Faces twisted in anger, but nothing in their eyes, which I thought was interesting. I'm like, don't eyes usually hold a lot of anger? But so they just have nothing yet. There's no emotion quite yet other than their faces.
But don't do the eyebrows.
It's not in the eyes. Their eyes are dead.
Oh, no. But the eyebrows.
No, the eyebrows.
When he says not in the eyes, I think he's like, because you see emotion in the eyes, like themselves.
It's usually from the eyebrows, though.
Okay, I'm going to agree to disagree.
Okay.
Okay.
So he jumps to the bed, and they follow. Oh, wait. They're already fighting.
No, but you're right. You're there. He jumps.
The reflection Rands do not fight together, and that is what gives real Rand a chance.
Yeah, they're not coordinated. They're not fighting strategically.
Just got really upset because he's also fighting on broken mirror shards, so his feet are bleeding.
Okay, so
poor kid.
So keep going. I feel like you might have missed something.
I didn't. There is one tiny reflection Rand on the bedside table that stabs him, but it's a reflection from something on the table.
No. It's from one of the shards.
No, I don't know.
Yeah, it is. It's from one of the shards.
I thought it was from something.
Oh, like no, you're right. Something. You're right. It is.
It wasn't
but then he looks around and he sees.
Later, okay. We're still fighting. So what he's noticing is three large reflection Rands. He needs a game plan, and he questions how much of them is still just reflections. That's scary.
Yeah.
So they're starting to, like, absorb him.
Yes.
And he does notice they appear to deplete real Rand of his energy, as well as, you know, his ability for ongoing fighting is being depleted. So he makes a choice and lets his sword disappear. And then the reflection Rand swords all disappear as well.
Okay. So you did. You missed something.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did. You missed something kind of big.
Oh, when he hit the tiny reflection and Rand absorbed him.
So, the tiny reflection, which is about 6 inches tall, stabs him, and he's bleeding, and he's like, oh my god, and he grabs it and basically squeezes it, and he absorbs it, and when he squeezed it, because he started noticing all of the shards in the room were starting to have little Rands step out of them.
Right.
Every single one of them. So there was like thousands of little Rands stepping out with flame swords. And when he squeezed the one, he felt this big pop and he felt like jolt after jolt after jolt of getting his energy back because all of the... So yeah. So I feel like that's interesting to highlight because...
It was in my notes. But you keep jumping me around, so
I'm sorry.
And I'm on my phone.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Yes, he felt more warmth, more energy, because he's been getting cold with this depletion.
Yeah.
So anyway, he's putting two and two together very quickly, by the way. I mean, he's doing a good job from the farm boy he was. So, therefore, when their reflection ran swords disappear, he tackles them and starts wrestling.
Yes.
He doesn't know how to absorb, but he's trying to figure it out as he wrestles, and it works. Let's just say it works.
It works.
It's like, not really defined.
Yeah,
however.
He's starting to feel like they're winning, but somehow he's able to get the last.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And Rand is just a bloody mess, and he can taste the taint.
Yeah.
And at this
taste the taint. There's a podcast out there that has done Taste the Taint Challenge where they have their it's when they do their anniversary, they have their listeners send in drink recipes. Ooh. And they make those. Everybody sends in good drink recipes because it's the best drink. It's a competition. And whoever wins gets the whole recipe for all the drinks.
So what drink would be your Taste the Taint for you?
Well, I actually submitted one this last year. I submitted a like a pumpkin spice latte. I called it Two Rivers Spice. Two Rivers Spice.
Nice.
But they weren't able to make it because mine took a lot of like weird ingredients that they weren't able to find.
Oh, okay.
So
I would do maybe a Lutzen, and that's at Lake Avenue Cafe in Duluth.
Well, they do this every October, so we can submit a drink.
I can't remember what's in it, but they do use local, like, alcohol. I don't know. It's
nice. I love it.
They have weird-ass stuff. Something tasted like pine or cedar, I swear. Yeah, so at this point, Rand believes it was the Forsaken trying to kill him, he's not blaming himself for potential for open madness. Everyone else blamed him.
Yeah.
Right? And I think this might be why I always thought it wasn't Rand.
Okay.
Because even it happened to Rand. Rand thinks it was the Forsaken. Seems like something the Forsaken would do to Taviren.
He does have a moment.
Does he?
He does have a moment where he's like, he questions himself, have I become so loathsome that I would do this to myself without knowing? Or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Something like that.
Okay.
So he wins, and Berylaine asks him, which one are you? And he says, I'm the only one that was the one that you were treating as if we were betrothed. I'm trying to find where he says that.
She's still across the room. Poor lady.
Yeah.
Bowing, but she has put on her flimsy robe as if for protection.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can't blame her for being like, which one are you? Because this is another horror movie plot. Like, yep. Which one's which? She stands and remains cool and collected, asking if she should send an Aiel or Aes Sedai to heal Rand, but he refuses, wanting to sit and think about a shepherd named Rand.
Yep.
End scene?
In a moment, he would send for Moraine to heal his wounds. In a moment, he would speak to the Aiel outside and become the dragon reborn once again. But for now, he only wanted to sit and remember a shepherd named Rand Althor. It's a very touching ending.
Yeah, and ironically, I just thought of this, like, yeah, and poor Perrin the blacksmith just wants to think about being a blacksmith.
Yep.
And then Matt's just like, gold, give me the gold.
Yep.
Berylaine, my room's down here, no biggie.
He would.
He would.
He would.
And that's okay. That's his personality.
Yeah.
That's okay. And I did. I was just like, oh, poor Rand. I mean, this is heartbreaking. And this is that whole. He's still about 20 years old, right?
Did 2021? I think he was either 19 or 20 when they left the Two Rivers. So he's in that. And they've been at this point. They've been gone for about a year.
That's just so much. I don't know. I actually feel excessively bad for Rand.
No, Rand's going through some hard shit. Like, I feel like there's a portion of the fandom that doesn't like Rand. And I think it's very easy to forget or even just not even, like gloss over. Like, not even realize that he is going through some serious mental trauma. It's the same with Egwene. There's a portion of the fandom that doesn't like Egwene. And, she can be petty and annoying sometimes, but there is definitely, there's definitely a lot of trauma with that as well, right? And then we're only three books in at this point, and there's already severe trauma to both of them.
Oh, yeah. Egwene, so, I mean, poor girl was, like, really hostage and a slave. That's not cool.
Well, and Rand just, like, I mean, there's
Rand's been fighting what he perceived as the Dark One on repeat.
Yeah. And finally to beat him the third time and be like, I won! I won Tarmon Gaiden! I am the hero of salvation! It's like, no, dude.
Newsflash.
You killed Ishmael. You didn't kill the Dark One. You killed Ishmael.
A man.
Yep. He was a man.
And I just, again, I thought this is one of the creepiest chapters. I loved it.
It was great.
Every bit of it.
It's a great chapter.
I would say people coming out of the cards was the creepiest part of all.
So that's very much, and I very specifically remember my first read was over 20 years ago, and I still very much specifically remember reading, because I grew up with Disney, reading is Red Queen, the Queen of Hearts cards.
Oh, yeah.
Card guards. That's all I thought about. It was like the card guards coming out.
And that,
but with the Queen of Hearts face on it, or you know that's where I know, like, the first time I read it, I know that's where my mind went.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
But it was great scene, very well written.
I also noted, I agree that this is a Forsaken or darkness coming after them. because how the chapter opened, there was a gust of wind and muttering of evil and darkness on the wind.
Yeah.
And then, side note, did anyone ever write a creative essay about this rooster that kept crowing? And I decided it's a boy named Pedrick. Probably Pedrick's rooster.
So you stopped listening to The Wheel Weaves once we started doing this podcast.
Yeah.
And you've only recently started listening to them again because you're ahead.
Yeah, and I'm still there. They're in book three as far as where I'm at.
But
did they talk about Pedrick?
Well, you know what happens at the beginning of every Wheel Weaves episode. Brett does his fun facts. So he has a fun facts about the cockroach.
And then I was just thinking, poor Pedrick, maybe he's part of the Taviran web, tangling them in this nightmare of
night. Who's Pedrick?
I named the boy who owns the rooster Pedrick.
Oh.
Yeah, I came up with it.
Okay.
I thought it sounded right.
Cool.
I wanted to give him a name.
Good.
Because I'm not too concerned about the rooster itself. It just happened to crow. But who's the poor kid tending it, and now your rooster's being used for evil? Or cock. Is a cock a rooster?
Yeah.
Double-checking.
Yeah. Cock is a rooster. Okay,
you know what I mean?
I think that's going to be the episode title. Pedrick the Evil Cock Razor.
I have so many concerns about that. It's lovely.
I'm pretty sure that's what it's going
to
be, though.
We'll say Pedrick is 18 at this time, just to be safe.
Okay. I don't have to say Pedrick the boy. I'm just going to say Pedrick the Evil Cock Razor.
Anyway, I got sidetracked with that, but I was like, it's someone's rooster, and your rooster's... it wasn't a signal for death, but apparently.
Oh my god, I love it.
Oh, fuck, marry, kill.
Yeah, I've been waiting for it. Are you ready?
Yeah, you go first.
I mean, we already know who my kill is, but I'm trying to avoid him, just in case that's
actually
the only one.
Actually, my kill isn't who you thought.
Oh, cool.
Okay, but now I have to do the F and
yeah,
the F.
No, I've got my fucking marries.
Go ahead.
Okay, so call me out. Tell me I'm a horrible person or a slut or just easy meat. I am 100% fucking Berylane. Why wouldn't you? Yes, she's forward, and yes, she's a ruler, and she's intimidating. Oh my god, that's all. Well, okay, that's. But back then, STD wasn't a thing. I don't think.
Oh, syphilis is obviously.
That might be the episode title. Syphilis has always been a thing. Okay. But no, so I'm totally fucking Berylane. I am 100% marrying Perrin. I feel like the way he handled his situation was the best way that he could handle his situation for him being Perrin.
I think he's a marriageable person in this chapter, actually.
He's constantly thinking about how he's slow-witted, or at least he's perceived as slow-witted, and it's really just because he likes to make sure, you know. And yet, when the heat was on, he made really quick decisions. And that is just somebody who can just work under pressure like a motherfucker. I appreciate it, and I want him for my husband. So... And
strong,
then
strong thighs.
If you're not strong gonna kill, he's a Buffy. He's fucking Jason Momoa.
Oh yeah,
know, he's cut. His arms are huge. More of a what? Fro. Oh, yeah, yeah, Jason. Yeah. No, he's got the fro.
Yeah.
Well, I've shown you pictures of Marcus Rutherford, right?
Oh, I've seen him.
And he's bulking up. Like, when he was very first cast, people were like, he's too skinny! And now you see pictures of him, it's like, oh, fuck. Nah,
it's
he's
like
not too skinny.
He's
been bulking
neck,
up.
It's only muscle.
He's been bulking up. He's definitely taking this role serious, which I appreciate. Anyways, you know, Estienne is too easy of a fuck. I'm actually gonna fuck.
Okay.
Or, I'm sorry. Sorry. Not fuck. Estienne is too easy of a kill. I wouldn't touch him with someone else's dick. But
FYI, his neighbor is outside politely reading at her patio, but she didn't look up when we're talking, so we're good.
I didn't notice her. Damn. Okay. So, anyways, I feel like Estienne is too easy of a kill.
We're good.
That's okay. It's just water. It's not beer. It's not alcohol abuse.
Who are you gonna kill?
So I'm not gonna kill Esther.
Okay, because he's too easy. All yours. I'm not killing him either.
I'm going to. Well, am I gonna take your kill then?
Nope.
Okay, I'm gonna kill Baron. Baron
the
was
foppish fool.
Yeah, but he was the one
looking
who,
down his nose.
Oh, yeah, let me just make sure I'm
take
right.
Out
yeah,
poke
yeah, 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 yeah,
people.
Yeah. No, he. None of them were as drunk as Estienne, and I'm not going to excuse Estienne's behavior, but you know, with his drunkenness, that's not okay. I get really drunk sometimes, and I still am not that level of a douche.
Right, drunk people don't always have to be douches.
You know, exactly, exactly. So, Baron was sober, and he was the one out of all of them that was more like, yeah, the eight. I think he called the Isle savages like 5 times in like 2 sentences. And yeah,
racist.
I mean, they're all pricks. They're all horrible people. The one that might figure out a way to redeem himself in my eyes at this point is a Dorian, because he just seemed like he had a little bit more empathy than the others.
Correct.
But he's still like, I mean, these are all just rich frat boys who have never had to deal with real life issues.
White
right
privilege.
And that is very horrible of me to say. I shouldn't generalize like that, but he's somebody who's never had to deal with real life issues, and he will always have more money until he, you know, more money than he knows what to do with, until he like squanders it away because he's a fucking dumbass, right?
And then there'll still be someone to save him.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
So my fuck is going to a Dorian.
Yeah,
because,
there you go.
Because he did read Matt, and he did make an attempt, and as a lordling, he could have just also poked and prodded at Matt. They all know he's a peasant.
Yeah.
They all know.
Yeah.
But he is a cool guy.
No,
so they
good.
Do want to
yeah.
Prepared. So I'm going to give it to him.
I was worried about defending him. I'm glad that you're,
no.
like Dorian's the best of them, by far.
Even, like you said, we can cast these wide judgments, but people are still good people,
yeah.
Even if they grew up under a trust fund or white... It does
yep.
not mean they're always bad.
Yeah, no, no. Adorian definitely seems like the best of them.
Mary, I'm actually going to give to Rand because of his decree in which people can be brought to the... Not commissioner, whatever.
The magistrate?
That they can be brought to the magistrate and held accountable for that reason.
For atrocious, yeah.
Not necessarily Rand the... mirrors and reflections in the bedroom. I mean, that was a great scene, but it's Rand the dragon who
yeah.
did say, all right, you guys are going to be held accountable for raping farm girls.
Yep. Yep.
Kill is Berlaine. I can't stand. And you know, I'm not up to date with the definition of rape. It changes from state to state, but I do feel like a man who can't think the word sex, and you are literally coming without his permission, and he has asked you to leave, and you keep advancing
yeah.
on him. That is coming right on sexual assault.
No, I completely
you
agree.
You are dead to me.
Using
your power.
Yep.
She's manipulating. Okay,
yep.
Everyone's upset at Perrin. No, Berlaine is using her power in place to, like, take advantage. And sure, it's to get more power. I get that. But it's not fair.
He's
not giving consent.
Yeah. No. I completely agree. I completely agree. And I just want to clarify real fast. My fuck for like, my choice.
Purely physical.
It Rand said no. If I were in his shoes, I would not.
Correct.
My reason to fuck her was because I would not say no. Like,
mm-hmm.
Most likely. And but once somebody says no, you do need a backup. Like
Barbie.
Yes, consent is extremely important.
So anyway, and these are all fictional.
And these are all fictional. And yes, definitely.
And we all
like,
know.
We,
true Mary is always Lamb. Let me rephrase. Like, he might not be mentioned, but I will always marry Lamb.
See, my true fuck is someone you haven't met yet, so we can't really talk about it.
I'm excited. It must be a good one.
It is.
But other than that, I think we'll do a couple chapters next time, right?
I think we'll try and do 3. I think we'll try and do the next 3
okay, we'll
next week.
We'll get a little grouping in. Okay.
Yep.
This is a good book. I do remember that much.
Oh, no, this one's fun. And actually... I think this is either the second or the third longest book, but I do believe that until like the last couple books, this is one of the longest chaptered book. Like each chapter is really long.
Cool.
So it's going to be hard to do like 5 or 6 an episode, but we might be able to pull out 3 or 4 maybe every once in a while. But so we'll aim for 3 next week and see how it goes.
So until next time, everyone be excellent to each other.
And party on, dudes.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Glee Man's Apprentice.
The Glee Man's Apprentice is available on Spotify, Pocket Cast, Google Podcast, Breaker, and Radio Public.
Our theme song is written by Twitch Avery and performed by Andrel, Bard of Time.